any benefit is there any evidence behind the use of bicarbonate for metabolic acidosis?
A very acidic environment can cause pretty significant cellular dysfunction.
I'm somewhat horrified that the majority of our clinicians reach for bicarb.
Sodium bicarb infusion was not associated with an improvement in the primary outcome.
That is not based on a shred of evidence.
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. So happy to be joined by my amazing co-stars here on CCPEM, Dr. Peter W., Dr. Rob Rodriguez, and Dr. John Greenwood. Gentlemen, it's been about 2 weeks since we recorded our last podcast. How have you been in the interim?
Things are going great in New Orleans. Still hot and still humid.
Yeah, just took my daughters back to college, and my son's starting school again tomorrow.
And Philadelphia is doing okay, trying to talk all the Eagles fans off the cliff as we stunk it up this preseason, so.
Well, it is only preseason. And yes, Peter, the heat is still hanging on here in the Baltimore area, I'm assuming also in Philly, with quite a lot of humidity over the last, actually over this particular week, it's been pretty rough. Well, let's get on to this podcast. You may recall in the last podcast, we did take two of our steroid discussion where we brought in some even more recent literature than our previous podcast reviewing the adrenal trial. This time, we're going to get into another controversial topic, and that is the patient with significant or severe metabolic acidosis and the utilization of sodium bicarbonate. It's remained controversial, its administration across the board for all comers with severe acidosis. Is there any benefit? Is there any evidence behind the use of bicarbonate for metabolic acidosis? And really, this particular podcast stems from an article that was just published in Lancet just 2 or 3 months ago called the Bicar ICU Study. Lead investigator was Dr. Jaber, and it was titled Sodium Bicarbonate Therapy for Patients with Severe Metabolic Acidemia in the Intensive Care Unit. This was a multi-center, open-label, randomized, controlled phase 3 trial, once again published in Lancet. John, would you say this is an important topic to talk about? Give us a little background about the use of bicarbonate in severe metabolic acidosis.
Well, Mike, you have picked a hot button topic on this one. And I think if any of us scroll through our timelines on our social media apps or whatever, you'll find without a doubt a major debate going on whether use of bicarb should be used in the ICU or in the emergency department for metabolic acidosis. And because it's so common, I think we see acute acidemia, whether it's respiratory or metabolic, in a majority of our patients who go on to require ICU level care. And part of it is just the baseline understanding that a very acidic environment can cause pretty significant cellular dysfunction. In terms of pure incidence in the literature, it appears that about 14 to 42% of patients who are critically ill have some degree of acidemia. And I think anecdotally, as well as epidemiologically, the mortality is greater when patients are super acidic. So it's greater than 50% when the pH stays under 7.2. So a recent survey was published that reported that a majority of clinicians still use sodium bicarbonate for the treatment of acidemia with hyperlactatemia, so a hyperlactate-related metabolic acidosis. And the effect of bicarb really on metabolic acidosis remains controversial. Now, obviously, this is depending on the cause. But when we look at the patients we see most commonly, the patients with sepsis, the 2016 Surviving Sepsis Campaign update suggests that really the effect of bicarbonate on hemodynamics and vasopressin requirements remains unknown, or at least incompletely understood. So the objective of the study was really to evaluate whether sodium bicarbonate infusion would improve clinical outcome in the critically ill patients with severe metabolic acidosis. And the hypothesis of the investigators were that a bicarb infusion would result in fewer deaths from any cause at 28 days, as well as a lower incidence of at least one organ failure at 7 days.
Great, great start, John. I completely agree. Very, very controversial. And it really comes down to the individual provider on many of these cases. Certainly, there are conditions for which sodium bicarbonate is appropriate. We talk about its use in hyperkalemia. We talk about its use, say, in sodium channel blocker overdose. But for the majority of critically ill patients, many are acidotic. And what do we do about the administration of bicarb? So as you said, The objective was really to indicate whether the sodium bicarbonate infusion would improve outcomes in critically ill patients. Peter, take us through the nuts and bolts of the study itself.
Yeah, pretty good study. So multi-center, open label, randomized, controlled phase 3 trial. It involved 26 ICUs throughout France. Their inclusion criteria, you had to be an adult greater than 18 years of age. You had to be admitted within 48 hours to the ICU. You had to have severe acidemia as defined by a pH less than 7.2, PaCO2 less than 45, and a bicarb less than 20. The total SOFA of 4 or more, and arterial lactate concentration of 2 millimolars or more. So what got you excluded? Respiratory acidosis got you booted. Digestive or urinary disorder with loss of bicarbonate. And so I think that's good. So that's kind of both of those are the cloaca effect, which is bicarb wasting. Stage 4 kidney disease, ketoacidosis, and then if you received a bicarb infusion within 24 hours before the screening time. Now, you're randomized how? Randomly assigned patients in a 1-to-1 ratio. The bicarb infusion group, 4.2% sodium bicarb. The aim was to achieve a pH of 7.2 or more during the 28-day ICU admission or until discharge from the ICU. They used 125 to 250 cc's in 30 minutes with a maximum of 1 liter in 24 hours after inclusion. Now, the measurement of an arterial blood gas should be between 1 and 4 hours after the end of each infusion. There was really no bicarb infusion. There were a priori stratified by site and 3 factors, age, 65 years, the presence or absence of sepsis, and the presence or absence of acute kidney injury score of 2 or 3. So the primary outcome was composite of death from any cause at 28 days after randomization and the presence of at least 1 organ failure at 7 days after randomization. Secondary outcome, use, duration, and number of days alive free of life support interventions. A SOFA score at enrollment and at days 1, 2, and 7 days after enrollment, total fluid intake, adverse events, ICU-acquired infections, and ICU length of stay. Analysis, all done on data from intention-to-treat population.
Outstanding, Peter. So, in essence, these folks were getting randomized to either the bicarbonate infusion, as you described, or no bicarbonate infusion. And they included those adult patients who had been in the ICU within 48 hours and had a relatively significant acidemia. And in terms of outcome, that composite of death at 28 days or at least 1 organ failure. So, Rob, what is the take-home message? Go through the results for us in this particular study.
Yeah, Mike. So they enrolled and randomized 400 patients, but 11 patients withdrew consent. So they wound up with a total of 389 patients in their analysis, 194 in the control group, 195 in the experimental group. And they performed an intention to treat analysis, as Peter mentioned. And the characteristics between the two groups were well balanced. They also noted that 341 out of 389 patients adhered to the planned treatment in their randomization group. That's actually very solid in terms of that parameter, that by far most patients adhere to the planned treatment and did not cross over to the other group in terms of treatment. And the proportion of patients who met the targeted pH of 7.3 and maintained that pH from 36 hours to day 2 was 26% in the control group and 60% in the bicarb group. In terms of the primary outcome, there was no significant effect in the overall group of patients in terms of the primary outcome of death. They had 71% in the control group and 66% in the bicarb group met that outcome with non-significant factor of p-value of 0.24. However, in the prior redefined stratum of patients who had AKI, the primary outcome occurred in fewer patients in the bicarb group. That was 70% in the mortality in the bicarb group versus 82% in the control group. And so both univariate and multivariate analyses demonstrated that bicarb was significantly associated with better mortality in the bicarb group at day 28 in those patients who had AKI, acute kidney injury. In terms of renal replacement therapy during the ICU stay, in all comers, 52% in the control group had renal replacement therapy, whereas 35% in the bicarb group had renal replacement therapy. And that was significant in all groups, not just the AKI subpopulation. In terms of other outcomes, there were no differences in days free of mechanical ventilation, no difference in ICU length of stay. There were slightly more patients in the bicarb group who remained free from vasopressors. In terms of complications, there was a slightly higher incidence of metabolic alkalosis, hypernatremia, and hypocalcemia in the bicarb group, but none of these were thought to be life-threatening complications. So bottom line was that sodium bicarb infusion was not associated with an improvement in the primary outcome in all comers, but in the priori defined clinical group of patients with AKI, the primary outcome occurred less frequently in the bicarb group than in control group. And in all comers, the bicarb group had lower need for renal replacement therapy.
Great job, Rob. Very, very interesting results. Now, before we get into just a more general discussion on your thoughts on this study, John, overall, every study has its limitations. What are some of the key limitations we should be aware of for this study?
All right. So I think there's a few limitations that it's important that the readers keep in mind, at least the listeners in this case. There was no specific control group fluid solution that was recommended. And then physicians caring for the patient, obviously this was an open label trial, so it wasn't blinded to the care provider. The bicarb infusion was titrated to maintain a pH of greater than 7.3. And the protocol suggested a range volume of a little over 4% sodium bicarbonate. It didn't use an actual formula to calculate the base deficit and then tailor the bicarb infusion to the individual patient. So as with a lot of these trials, you really have to be careful about these fixed dose trials and their effect on individual patients. They also didn't stratify patients based on a mechanism of acidemia. Causes were all pretty heterogeneous. One or two other things that dress off the top of my head is that this is really a mild to moderate metabolic acidosis. So if you look at the median pH for these patients, it was 7.15 with an interquartile range of like 7.1, 7.2. So they didn't really get into that severe metabolic acidosis patient. So that group is out and this doesn't necessarily apply to that patient. But the exclusions did a pretty good job overall of keeping out patients who actually may potentially benefit, so particularly the digestive or urinary disorder, advanced renal disease patients, and obviously ketoacidosis and respiratory acidosis. So those are just a few. I don't know if any of you guys picked up on any others reading through.
Peter, any additional limitations that you have in terms of what John hasn't mentioned so far?
No, I like the fact that John mentioned the digestive diseases and the urinary losses. But it would have been nice to see there was no hyperchloremic other cases. I mean, if you start thinking about the pneumonic hard up, and then they covered the majority of that. But I think it would have been a little bit better had they just said we excluded hyperchloremic, which is the other name for hyperchloremic metabolic acidosis is bicarb responsive metabolic acidosis.
Great point. Rob, any additional limitations that you were able to identify?
They go into great depth about comparing the group of patients that had that a priori defined AKI, and yet it showed benefit in that group. I would have liked to see equal attention to the contrary group, the group that did not have AKI, and an analysis in that regard, or an analysis of patients who had what we typically call a high type of acidosis that traditionally has not been thought to benefit from bicarb. So I would have liked to see a little bit more analysis addressing those groups, because that's sort of the group for me that I wonder about. Before this study, I'd already kind of accepted and thought that bicarb would be helpful in patients who have acute kidney injury, because that's part of their treatment anyway. the real question for me is the group of patients who don't have acute kidney injury and have a severe acidosis.
Great question. So to summarize, once again, Rob, you had indicated this, but overall in this study, this sodium bicarbonate infusion did not have an effect on reducing 28-day mortality or the presence of at least one organ failure at day 7 for this particular patient population. It did decrease the mortality in that a priori defined stratum in patients with AKI and overall decrease the incidence of renal replacement therapy. So John, I'm going to turn to you first, then Rob, then Peter. How do you incorporate this evidence into your practice of potential bicarbonate infusion in the acidotic patient? How are you playing this out, whether the patient be critically ill in the ED or in the ICU?
Well, I think that this kind of supports a practice in which, as kind of Rob said, that many of us have adopted for the mild to moderate metabolic acidosis patient who doesn't fall into any of the exclusion criteria of this study. I'm going to treat the underlying cause. And oftentimes with improved perfusion, some resuscitation, with time, we'll see that sort of metabolic acidosis go away. But where I don't think this applies is in my really, really sick patient who is super tachypneic already and then goes on to be intubated because their work of breathing is so hard because they're trying to compensate for their metabolic acidosis, their pH is less than 7. I don't think this study applies. And as I think a few other people already mentioned with that severe AKI, again, I'm not quite sure that this study tells me don't use sodium bicarbonate just yet. So those are at least two ways in which I think that this study hasn't helped me, but has supported a practice that I already use.
Great points. Rob, how about you?
I love the overall idea to tackle these issues that we talk about in a randomized trial. Again, I would have liked to see another analysis of the groups that I really have concern about, which are the patients that do not have AKI, but have a severe acidosis, presumably a severe lactic acidosis. Those are the ones that I wonder about. And this study does not really answer the question in that population. So as I said before, even in my non-critically ill AKI patients who have a severe acidosis, if their pH is below 7.2 and that it looks like they're having AKI, I'll often give them bicarb just because that's part of treatment for renal failure. So the fact that they showed benefit in the group of patients with acidosis and renal failure does not really change that practice for me, and I suspect it didn't change that practice much for anybody else because we were already giving bicarb to those patients. So unfortunately, I don't know that this study changes my practice too much. Perhaps they are going to do another analysis, like I mentioned, and maybe that's coming out in another paper or something. I don't know.
All right. Good points, Rob. And Peter, bring us home in terms of final thoughts. Any modifications to your practice with this particular information, these study results?
So I would say no. And then I might be a dissenter in the group a little bit more strongly. I'm somewhat horrified that the majority of our clinicians in the ED and the ICU reach for bicarb in the setting of acidemia and hyperlactinemia. To me, it's not founded. Again, separate issues for bicarb responsive diseases and separate issue for AKI. But, you know, I cut my teeth on the Nairn's articles and really do not support the uncontrolled use of bicarb in patients for low pHs in acidemic states. I'm just not a fan of that.
Peter, I'm in the same camp, you know, in terms of just all comers with severe acidosis and hyperlactemia. I completely agree with what you had just said in terms of just the administration of bicarbonate. I do think, as Rob indicated with this particular study, it lends a little bit more credence to the administration in patients with AKI and more severe renal failure, as these authors define with the Acute Kidney Injury Network scores of 2 or 3. But certainly the reflexive administration for just simply patients with severe acidosis I still think is not well supported.
I had one kind of final question to throw out to you guys. Is there a pH in a critically ill patient that's intubated? Is there a pH that you use where you do throw in bicarb?
Rob, I think it's a fantastic and outstanding question. I'll be honest, for certain conditions such as DKA, I know I will let that pH drift a little bit lower. I think the threshold probably for me is dropping below 7, but I don't want to be really dogmatic about it. I think it does get down to the underlying condition and how successful I feel the resuscitation is going towards that. I don't have an absolute cutoff, but probably would get pretty nervous below 7. Peter, John, what about you guys?
You know, I would say for cardiac arrest patients or people who are nearing arrest, I will consider that. If they are not responsive to other measures, I will consider it pHs probably 7.1 and below. And that is not based on a shred of evidence. This is simply comfort level.
I've asked a few nephrology colleagues about this as well, because we've had a couple local debates, some M&Ms regarding patients with severe metabolic acidosis. And I'll say the one thing that really irks me a little bit, though, is when the residents, you have a pH of 6.9, that the patient's clearly already having some degree of respiratory compensation. They get intubated and then they titrate up the respiratory rate to get a minute ventilation of basically infinity. And you can't compensate at all. The patient can't compensate any more than that. And they're work of breathing so hard that they're generating even more lactate just because of how hard their work of breathing is. So for me, my number is if I'm 7.0 or less, I'm going to start bicarb therapy. But to be honest, they probably need renal replacement therapy if their renal function is so bad that they're dumping bicarb, they can't reabsorb it, and they have that degree of metabolic acidosis. I'm going straight to CRRT, which, to be honest, the buffer solution that is given back to the patient to bicarb containing solution. So if I'm at 7.0, I'm really, really using my sodium bicarb as a bridge to renal replacement therapy.
Great points. Now, guys, this has been a great discussion. I think we brought everyone up to speed on the latest article regarding sodium bicarbonate in metabolic acidosis. It certainly seems like, while informative and adding some information, the debate and controversies will continue for select patient populations. Let's bring this discussion to a close for now. Certainly, once again, keep the conversation going. Write us those emails and any continued follow-up we will be certain to get on future podcasts. Just a note before we end, things coming up in the very short term. There is the Crashing Patient Conference from the University of Maryland Department of Emergency Medicine, founded and continued to be hosted by Dr. Amal Mattu. That is going to be October 9th through the 11th in Baltimore. You can find it on our UMEM website. An outstanding conference in terms of critical care, a pre-conference symposium, also the main conference focusing on resuscitation and risk management. Peter, we've also got Critical Points rapidly approaching. How is that going?
That's going great. So that's the last day of November and the first 2 days of December. Just a spectacular venue in San Bernardino, right outside of San Diego, with some spectacular critical care faculty, some good ultrasound gurus there as well. So if you're looking to burn your CME before the end of the year, come join us.
Outstanding. Can't wait for both the Crashing Patient and Critical Points conferences. Well, that'll do it for this podcast on bicarbonate for metabolic acidosis. Once again, this is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore for Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. We will talk to you next podcast. Bye for now.